Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
And I might say, back from all the conferences that I've been attending lately, it's so good to be back in the studio and on with some of my favorite people, of course, Alice Alvey, Andy Schell, and Joe Clark. We're here to discuss all going on in the industry, and certainly there is a lot going on. Just came back from New York City. By the way, at the top of the program, we always mention what day it is for those of you that are downloading the broadcast. It is Monday, May 14th. And we are glad that you're tuned in and listening. I was at the Reuters reception, the Thomson Reuters reception. And, of course, everyone knows about Reuters. They're the news service that's out there. And up walked to me Alex Martel. And Alex says, I listen to your broadcast all the time. I'm responsible for all social media here at Reuters. And he says, I listen to your broadcast all the time. It was one of those moments where you kind of go, you know, folks, it was, I just appreciated Alex coming up and walking up. It validated what we're doing. It's just the fact that we got companies like Reuters listening in on what we're doing here regularly is a real compliment. And we get that across the country. I know when Alice is out, we hear from a lot of you. Joe was out and about. He gets to hear from you. And occasionally when Andy heads out in the field, he hears the same thing. We appreciate each of you dialing in, being a part of the broadcast. Again, we're doing this as a public service to you, and we appreciate what's going on. There is so much going on in the industry, and this is why we bring this broadcast each and every week to you, because we really believe there's got to be a way to stay up on top of all that's going on. And so we're the digest filter out there, filtering through all the news articles, so we can hopefully provide you an update on all that's going on. But without further ado, as we do at the top of each broadcast, let's get over to Joe Farr and find out what is going on in the world of interest rates. Good to have you with us, Joe. Glad to have you back with us as well.
There's a lot going on, although not a lot of movement in price. But, Europe is really driving things right now. Last week, I wasn't on the show Monday last week, but over the weekend prior, there was a big election, but I'll get to that in just a minute. But again today, you know, MBS prices are being affected. So far today, there's a favorable movement. It's we're up 7/30 seconds, and it's good. All on the growing uncertainty out of Europe. You know, several things are going on, which is hard to make a lot of sense of as it relates to where it's going to come and affect us right now. But Greece hadn't been able to form a government yet. They were part of that election process on the, what day was that, the 6th, when the ruling party was voted out and austerity was voted out, and so they've not been able to put their government together. Over the weekend, even in Germany, Socialist Party won a statewide election in Germany, and it was one of the papers called it a humiliating defeat for Angela Merkel. And along with that,
the whole austerity movement. The whole austerity. This is just a shocking information. You'd think they'd get it over there, but they obviously don't.
Well, it's tough to do, you know, and that's what they're finding out. As a result of the uncertainty going on, interest rates in Spain have shot higher this morning. Eurozone industrial production fell sharply during the morning, or the announcement for the current month industrial production fell sharply. And you know, there's very real questions about whether Greece will stay in the Eurozone, and leaving is going to be very, very messy. There are concerns, regarding the banking system, whether or not the threat of leaving the euro would be enough to cause runs on the banks in Greece as well as in Spain and Italy. So there's just a lot going on over there, and it's having the effect of a flight to safety. We're seeing stocks down. stocks are being hurt more than mortgages and treasuries are being helped. Last week,
that's
for instance, let's talk about, last week we saw, think about what happened last week. We had the big elections over the weekend, and so beginning Monday we had this issue about will austerity survive, and the answer is probably no, it won't. So that brings into question, how are they going to balance their budgets? How are they going to, Greece, how are they going to get money out of the ECB if they don't reach their austerity cost-cutting guidelines? You know, a big flight to safety last week. Stocks lost ground, and there was strong demand for treasuries. And then on top of that, PPI in the U.S. was released, and it fell. All right. So with all that, you would expect a nice movement in mortgage rates, lower in mortgage rates. Didn't happen. It was really a very quiet week. Every day there was just a small movement, and what it seems to be saying is that investors just having a hard time accepting lower yields. You know, are we about as at the point where we could be, where as low as we can go? And you look at MBS prices, they're up today, as I mentioned, and they're back up to about the highest level they've ever been at 3.5% Fannie Mae's over 104, 104 and 7/30 seconds, I believe. So it's just interesting that we're at a point where this kind of bad news, which ordinarily causes a nice improvement in prices and a reduction in rates, it's not having as significant an effect. And
well, you sit and wonder, Joe, if it's not the limbo effect. The old guy, you drop the bar as low as you can, but there comes a physiological point where you can't fit a human being.
You just can't go lower.
At some point. Yeah. You can't go lower. And I think the psychic of a lot of investors are going, I can't accept a lower rate. So it brings up some interesting dynamics. And, you talk about Europe, it really comes to the question, if you're not going to accept austerity, what's the only thing you're going to do? You're going to continue to print more money. And that creates a horrible tragic end of hyperinflation at some point down the road. So fascinating. What do we got coming up this week? I assume Europe will still be the dominant news
it's
driver.
It's going to dominate. We do have pretty significant U.S. economic announcements coming out. Tomorrow's retail sales, which is a big event. And CPI comes out tomorrow. I think we'll see a headline drop, or certainly not a significant increase in the headline number, given how it's been affected by energy prices here lately. But that will be big. Industrial production comes out on Wednesday. The minutes of the FOMC meeting come out at 2:00 on Wednesday, and then Thursday's jobless claims and Philly Fed and leading indicators. But as you said, Dave, Europe's going to be a driver here for some time, as you know, a lot of these uncertainties aren't going to be answered in days or maybe even weeks. We could have a long drawn out, or if they are answered, they're going to open up new uncertainties. You know,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say if something happens where dramatic in Greece, the next question is going to be, well, what does that mean happens in Spain, and what does that mean happens in Italy, et cetera, et cetera. So
it is certainly a stack of dominoes, all very closely in close proximity. And it seems like when one tips, another. And it's not nicely arrayed in this line where you can logically always figure it out. And I think that's the part that brings on this uncertainty, Joe.
Sure.
I had this last week when I was back in New York, I had the privilege of going in studio with Fox at Fox Business on with Neil Cavuto at his evening show, his signature show. And it is just a real honor always to be back there. And I was writing up my notes, say, Dave, what do you want to talk about? What do you think we should talk about? And I go, let's talk about housing. So Neil picked a topic, and of course it was on housing, where we see prices going. And he says, what is it going to take? I said, eliminate. What's the biggest problem? I said, in a single word, it's uncertainty. It's certainty in the markets here, globally, and everything else. And we were talking off camera a bit, and it was really fun to get his perspective. You don't have a lot of time with him because he's in the middle of his broadcast. When they go to an ad break, you don't have a lot of time. But it's the whole attitude of what's going on in Europe. And the lack, what's so shocking is people not aware of, by rejecting austerity, rejecting what is really a responsible approach to
the conundrum that they've created over there, and quite frankly that we've created here in America, we don't really have any other choice other than to do one of two things, austerity or start printing money. And if we continue to print more money, and I'm hearing that more on a reoccurring theme, if we continue to print money or we start printing money more than we already have, a QE3, a QE4, a QE5, there's some talk I'm hearing. We'll talk about more about that in the Hot Topic segment. Fascinating discussion and the consequence. Talk about kicking the can down the road, but pretty soon the can quits being a can and it becomes a hand grenade. And one of those times you kick it, it blows up on your foot and parts of your body. If you survive, it's just what it maims to our economy. So I got a lot more on that. I'm all loaded for bear in the Hot
You're
Topic.
You're passionate,
Joe. I feel it very strongly right now because if we look at where this country is going and we look at what's going on in Europe, and I hate to say it, they're just a few number of months ahead of us is what it looks
like. No question.
So it's very, very questionable. Joe, thank you so much. It's good to have you back. It's good to be back
thank
with
you.
Can't wait to get Alice's update. Folks, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility for the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked a loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS Quoteline can eliminate these frustrations. MBS Quoteline monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS Quoteline, you'll never be out of touch with the market, whether you're in the office or on the road. See for yourself what MBS Quoteline can do for you. Go to MBSQuoteline.com to start a risk-free two-week trial. MBSQuoteline.com. 646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
That's good to have you back with us, and the only person that I think could successfully bring us all the bad news about what's going on with regulation and get away with it is Alice Alvey. She is the darling of the industry, the girl next door that helps us see things we don't, tells us things we don't necessarily want to hear, but we've got to hear. Alice Alvey, good to be back in the studio with you and have you on the line. Where have you been traveling around to these days?
Hi, Dave. I am headed to Texas this week. I'm actually headed down to San Antonio to help a company out there, so I'm going to be near you. But I'm in and out, so I don't get a chance to stop by and say hello.
I know. I'd love to do that. Well, what do we have going on in the legislative update, Alice?
Well, I think for those of you paying attention to the J.P. Morgan Chase story and the $2 billion debacle or whatever you want to call it, brought the Volcker Rule back into the headlines. And so I thought I'd just take a minute to make sure everybody knows technically where that stands and essentially what it was. So the Volcker Rule under the law that the banking entities would be prohibited from engaging in proprietary trading and investing or sponsoring hedge funds or private equity funds, and there's some exceptions in there. And the law goes on to define what does proprietary trading mean. It also defines these exceptions that would give essentially the Fed authority to permit the banking entity to enter into any prime brokerage transaction with any hedge fund or private equity as long as certain additional conditions are met. So there's been a lot of talk about the Volcker Rule. Now that Chase has had this problem, do we need to keep this rule as it's worded? Does it need to be tighter? There was a lot of discussion about were there banking entities out there trying to loosen up the rule. So essentially, I just wanted to make people just kind of aware of what it was, and then essentially that it was set to take effect the earlier of 12 months after completion of the rulemaking. So the comment period for the Volcker Rule just closed February 13th of this year. So we're still in that phase of working it out to before we get a final rule. And so we haven't started any of the clocks yet. There's also a piece out there that said it would have to go into effect within 2 years from the date of enactment of the Dodd-Frank Act. And so that's still, you know, a good year away. So that's kind of where it stands today. I think are we going to talk more about that during our?
We got to get into that more in the hot topic segment. I can't wait to talk a little bit about Jamie Dimon's comments just before the news hit about how he thought things need to be loosened up,
right.
And then they dropped that bomb in the marketplace. And I go, oops, bummer timing on trying to get the talk to loosen things up. So anyway, we'll get more into that. Let's get on with some of the other developments. So much going on, Alice.
Yeah, there is. Just a heads up, the Campus MBA is holding a webinar this Wednesday, and the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is going to be the stars of the webinar. I think at this stage, I do recommend anytime you can go hear what they're having to say, you know, start to get yourself familiar with the things they are saying, even though if you're concerned, they may certainly just be speaking out of the book. Nonetheless, you still want to kind of get yourself used to that. Be careful, though, unless you want to run a tape recorder. I'm not so sure you would be able to use anything, you know, in the defensive action, but it's, I've done that before. I keep my little tape recorder sitting right next to the phone during a webinar sometimes just in case I want to save it for later. So a couple other last things here for everybody is we do have that we have our August 13th. I think on the last few shows I've been saying August 5th, and I need to correct my date. It is August 13th for you lenders who need to have in place a policy to be able to submit suspicious activity reports and make sure you're in compliance with the anti-money laundering provisions of the Bank Secrecy Act. So you don't have to implement the entire act. It's just effective August 13th. You have to have this plan in place. If you would like a copy of my tip sheet, feel free to send me an email, alv@mortgage-u.com, or you can use alice@mortgage-u.com. It all goes to the same place, and I'm happy to give you my several-page tip sheet on things to watch out for to get that implemented, since that's right around the corner. And you want to be able to say, I'm able to file SARS as of August 13th. Not that I just have a written policy, you know, here it is, I got it in writing, and then you're still spending months trying to get people to actually do it. So, and in terms of legislation, you know, we're not seeing a lot of movement as everyone's trying to get reelected. So I'm going to put that on hold since I know we have a nice long hot topic section to work through. One last implementation date coming up, June 11th. Is the date for the new streamlined refi MIP to take effect on FHAs, as well as the increase for the jumbo loans goes into effect June 11th. So keep that date fresh in your mind, as that's just a month away now, very close. So that's it for me today, Dave.
That's it? That's it? Oh, there's so much to talk about and so little time, as they say. But it's good to have you with us. We will be going into a lot more of this. There's so much to talk about in the Hot Topic segment.
Yes.
So good to hear your voice live and in person, Alice. So good to have you with us. Folks, we'll be right back after this break. Stay tuned for the rest of the broadcast. Got some great stuff coming up. Talk to you soon. Stay tuned.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals, providing classroom and web-based delivery, and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record, performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees, both live and online, on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lickin'.
You know, I get away from the studio and those mute buttons, you forget to turn them on and off. Anyway, it's good to have me back with you. We appreciate you tuning in each and every week. Again, the commentary we get when we're traveling around to the conferences, it is so encouraging when you walk up and say, Dave, I listen to your broadcast. It's really exciting when Alex there at the Reuters made that comment, so appreciate it. Find us out. Any of us that are traveling, we appreciate you being with us. Someone that's out and about in the industry a fair amount is our beloved Prophet Doctor. And Andy, I've got Prophet Doctor, are you there? We got you all your mic all on. You there?
Am I muted? Am I muted? Am I on? Am I on?
Are you on? Hello, hello. Andy,
can you hear me now?
To talk to you. Every everyone is talking at the conferences about all the reporting that's going on. And for the first time, Andy, I'm really hearing the emphasis shifting to an awareness accounting. It feels like just maybe, possibly, they're coming out of the basement and landing more front and center. The other thing is more and more banks are getting into it. And what I found surprising when I overheard a couple of conversations from the banks, I'm talking about the regulated FDIC, state or federally chartered banks are there. They're talking about, you know what, I'm not sure that we've got our accounting all together. And you'd think a banker would. What do you think is behind some of those comments, Andy?
Well, the you know, a lot of times people are motivated by opportunity, upside, the next thing that can happen, the good things they're going to get, the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. And sometimes people are motivated by the other foot dropping, the financial consequence of an IRS tax lien, the financial consequence of a bank board of director being sued personally because of a failure at the bank. And so I think we're seeing more of a fear-based reaction as opposed to an incentive-based reaction. But nevertheless, it's good that people are thinking about accounting. You hate to see it that all these years, Dave, we've been talking about this. We've been trying to see it as an incentive-based opportunity to understand your KPIs, get your loan level detail, be able to really manage and fine-tune your business. And, you know, the response has been strong by some who are very adept, and those companies are running very well today. But others are kind of, you know, accounting belongs with servicing down in the basement in the dark metal desks. And finally, people are saying, you know what, I really do need to know my KPIs, and I really do need to get financially strong and have my call reports be accurate because I could go to jail.
Yeah.
This fall, at the very least, you're going to get your state license suspended, and there's even fraud potential that comes along with this because there's federal agencies looking at it. Bank board of directors have personal liability for failures at a bank. Mortgage company owners, as the CFPB implements their leveling of the playing field, mortgage company owners are going to have personal liability for losses to the government. Federal pursuit, getting sued by the federal government could happen. Not saying it's going to happen. It's on the path of people misestimating the importance of getting this stuff right.
Yeah, I think you bring out the strongest point there. It's those we have been talking on this program. You listen to Alice. If there was any question that you know, mortgage bankers, independent mortgage bankers are starting to feel like they're a very regulated institution. They are, at least more so, probably not to the degree that a bank is. However, Andy, we're hearing just more and more that lenders are getting the sense of they're more under the microscope than they ever have been. And
well,
I sense
things,
that.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Yeah.
No, finish your thought.
Well, I just I think you're done. You know where I was going. The bottom line is, I mean, independent mortgage bankers are feeling the same level of accountability. If board of directors of a bank can be sued because of something that went wrong, it's a more increasing awareness, which is driving a lot of M&A activity, of what can happen to business mortgage banking business owners and their executives that run their company.
Yes. Exactly. Well, hopefully when we get to the hot topics, we can go into this a little bit more. There was a link to an article that published by the Boston Federal Reserve about the mortgage crisis that Dave Stevens sent out after the secondary marketing conference to everybody who's on the MBA directory. So a lot of people on the radio probably got it. And it goes into and it talks about the tulip bubble from 1630, and it goes on and it references a book that was written in 1841 called The Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds. And I think that's an amazing title. Extraordinary Popular Delusions. Yeah, and the Madness of Crowds. And I think part of that applies to the housing bubble, and part of that applies to the mentality of the mortgage bankers, because they've extraordinary popular delusions that we all believe that, you know, we just fix it with volume. We'll just do more volume.
Yeah.
Raise the rates a little bit,
no problem.
Do more volume. We don't care about the details because everybody in the industry used to believe we have this extraordinary popular delusion and the madness of crowds. We all believe, go to the conferences, everybody talks about, hey, do you know your profit per loan? No, I'm just going to do more volume. Hey, do you know what your KPIs are in your business? No, I'm just going to do more volume. And that's changing because that was a delusion. People believing that that's all you had to do was do more volume is a delusion. It's wrong, and it's going to cost people to fail. And we're finally realizing, just like we had the housing bubble, we've got the delusion of accounting doesn't matter, operations doesn't matter, compliance doesn't matter, just do more volume. That's finally coming to an end, and I think it's great.
Well, it's good because it's good in the sense that it's maturing our industry, and we're going to see those that did not have that appreciation probably are not going to be here, probably shouldn't have been here. And sad to see some of them go, but the reality is the bar is going up. We're in the case of Joe's thing, where bars are going down. But it's just getting more and more difficult to be sloppy in the business. Andy Schell, so good to have you with us and bring us up. We'll get into this a lot more. I want to hear about that tulip principle because we've heard so many economists talk about it. It's well quoted. And you're the kind of guy that just sits around on a weekend reading tulip stories and there's a relation to the economists. Can't wait for you to get into that. Folks, we're going to have the Tony Garitano segments coming up right now. He's got us some things. He's going to be talking about new rules to worry about. Man, do we have to worry about anything more? But how can lenders use technology to maintain compliance? Big topics at the conferences. We're pretty pleased that you're here with us. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. It's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Good to have you back with us. Wandering around these various conferences is Tony Garitano. He's kind of just a presence always at all these. We saw Tony and got to spend time with Tony at the Progress in Lending event, of course, which is Tony's event there at the Tech Conference. He handed out awards. Morgan will talk more about that in the future. It's really good. And then I saw Tony. I didn't get a chance to talk to him because he was always with someone. There's just this entourage following around asking Tony questions about what's going on. So we've got two questions for Mr. Garitano today. Then we're going to talk about rules. Tony, everyone's talking about rules, and they're worried about them. They're worrying some lenders out there. What are new rules that are worrying lenders the most from your perspective?
Well, what happened, Dave, is I got this new study from Questsoft, and as I'm sure you know, they're kind of the de facto standard when it comes to HMDA reporting.
Yes, they are.
They interviewed almost 500 lenders about the rules that are keeping them up at night most. And it's not surprising that the TILA and the GFE was number one.
Changes in. Yeah.
The changes, as you know, you report on this show, you know, they're still in progress. They've been changed in the past 2 or 3 years, and we're going to get more changes going forward. After that, RESPA was number two. And All Things Dodd-Frank was number three. So that
all
shouldn't really surprise anybody.
That's kind of like all of the above. That's like checking all of the above box. Yeah. Well, that's really interesting. And you're hearing, you're so in touch with the technology world, with the vendors that are out there. What are you seeing as far as how lenders are using technology to maintain the compliance of this? Alice, I mean, they should be listening to the broadcast, listening to Alice. They should be using firms like that for training and all that. But in the technology world, what are you seeing?
Well, I agree. I mean, they should definitely be listening to Alice, and they should definitely be listening to the radio show. You guys have great information. In terms of the technology, when it came to MDIA and RESPA, I saw a lot of adoption around upfront electronic disclosures. And
right.
I think that that's something that's becoming more mainstream, Dave. I think a lot of people may be pulling back because of these TILA and GFE changes that are coming. But I would tell lenders, don't pull back on upfront e-disclosures. We don't know what's going to happen with TILA and the GFE, so don't stop your implementation of e-disclosures because of uncertainty, as you mentioned earlier, Dave. You really need to automate. You need to have an electronic audit trail of what you're doing, especially at the point of sale. So I think e-disclosures is a good place to start.
It is, and some of the things I've been meaning to ask you this question since you and I were together at the tech show. Some of the things that you walked away from the tech show that are the most noteworthy from your perspective, Tony?
I was impressed by the mobile announcements, Dave.
Three
loan origination systems had mobile announcements, and there was this new mobile point of sale application that was announced at the show too. So, I think that's something to keep your eye on and watch, because it's going to reshape the industry as we learn how to use that technology in the mortgage space.
Well, and you listen to the interview that I had last week with Dominic, which was fascinating, and you see how to use it, where to use it, what are the risks in it. And there's just so much. Appreciate you lining up some of the interviews with some of these top technology professionals. They don't know me from Adam, but I just mentioned your name. They go, oh, yeah, I'd love to be there. So I appreciate it so much. Tony, good to have you. Good to be there with you in Phoenix at the Tech Conference, and it's good to have you on the broadcast each week, kind of bringing in a perspective for us, keeping us in touch of one of the more critical aspects of what's going on, supporting our companies these days, and that's technology. Good to have you with us, Tony.
Thank you, Dave.
Good. We'll talk to you soon. Folks, stay tuned. We'll be right back for the Hot Topics segment. And I've been talking about a rumor that's running around out there. You're going to want to hear this one. Wow, this one could change the landscape just a little bit. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
In today's climate, quality counts more than ever, and Wetzel's Trot can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzel's Trot has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzel's Trot can assist your organization in maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, servicing quality control, quality control plans, fraud review services, and even web-based quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzel's Trot represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzel's Trot today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzel's Trot, the single source solution for your quality control needs.
And now, broadcasting live from Austin, Texas, we're back with the Lincoln on Lending Show.
Well, it's good to be back with you. I just wanted to carve out some time where the Joe, Alice, Andy, and I sat and visited a little bit about some of the things going on. And we appreciate you tuning in. I appreciate the many of you that tell me, you know what, I just love it when the two of you just talk about all that's going on out there. We love your perspective. They can read about the facts, but it's our perspective that we add to the facts that are going on out there. Let's go back to some things that Alice was talking about, and then I want to get into the tulip side of things, and we'll talk more about what I learned from the conference and share some things, especially that big rumor that's out there. So, Alice, let's get back into some of the things that you were reporting on that you thought you wanted to carry over into this segment. So let's get back to you.
Well, can you hear me, Dave, all right?
We hear you loud and clear.
All right, good. I cannot tell.
Even though you're way.
So sorry, everyone, for going, oh, no, did they just say that again? All right, so here we go. We, in our pre-show call, I was talking about the Volcker Rule, and Andy Schell had a little background that I thought our listeners would appreciate on who is Volcker.
Jeremy Volcker. Andy, come on, fill us in.
Well, all right. So I think it's interesting that here we have the Volcker Rule, and Volcker was chairman of the Fed under Jimmy Carter from 76 through 79. And a lot of people on the show are too young to remember what interest rates were like in the late 70s, except for, well, Dave and Joe and I remember because we were there. And,
I was a lonely processor. That's what I was saying. I did have loans in pot. I remember my 21% fixed rate and all the rest being 1-year ARMs at 11%. Yeah.
So if we think back to this, I had finance classes in college during this time frame. And so we were studying Paul Volcker and the Fed. And the fundamental thing that Paul Volcker came up with is he had this brilliant idea. He said, you know what, let's not worry about managing interest rates anymore. Let's let interest rates do what they do, and let's implement what's called monetarism, where all they did was they watched the money supply. And by watching the money supply, managing the economy by watching the money supply turned out to be, well, disastrous. And so that's how we ended up with 21% prime and 19%, 21% mortgage rates, and all of the crazies that took place in that time was thanks to Paul Volcker, who now has come back and is working on the new Volcker rule. And he had an interesting stint in trying to save Arthur Andersen, the public accounting firm. So he's associated with a couple of different things that maybe worked well and maybe didn't work as well. And we'll see where this Volcker rule turns out.
Well, I think it's significant to note that interest rates were at the highest at that point. But get into talking about the principle. When you read this article, and oftentimes it's an article I've heard often quoted when you listen to economists talk about what happened in the housing bubble, and they go back to talk about the tulip. The tulip principle, whatever that is. Go into that, Andy.
Yeah, the tulip
educate
bubble.
Our listeners.
The Dutch tulip,
the tulip bubble.
Bubble.
Yeah.
Called.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They call it tulip mania.
Tulip
well,
mania.
What happened,
okay.
Well, what happened is it's a testament to the book Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds.
We want to slow
that
down. Slow that down. Give that to our listeners again. Slow that down. We got to write that one down.
Okay. Extraordinary Popular Delusions. So, unusual things that everybody believes, delusional perspectives, extraordinary popular delusions, and the madness of crowds. And this book is
Joe, doesn't that sound like what's going on in Europe right now? That's just a perfect title that sums it up.
I don't know. I'm writing it down for my next charades game.
That's good. Okay, Andy, sorry for interrupting there, but yeah, there's
no,
a lot of delusional
good.
Madness
good.
Going on.
Joe. Extraordinary popular delusions and the madness of crowds. And what this references back to, and you know, we everybody that has a college economics class studies the Dutch tulip bubble. And so what had happened was that in the Netherlands they grow tulips, you know, the big windmills, and they grow tulips. And the value of tulips were believed to be on the rise, and they were rising rapidly, rising very, very, very rapidly, such that people were selling off acreages, massive amounts of acreage, to buy one tulip. And suddenly, long story short, it burst. This is in the 1630s in the Netherlands, and it burst. And people were going, oh, my gosh, how did this happen? What could have caused the tulips to bubble? Was it people who were fraudulently representing the value of tulips? Was it the tulip growers who were misrepresenting the value? Well, no. Were people misunderstanding the value of tulips? Were people misled that there were CDO tulips that were totally that the analytics were too hard to understand? Well, no. What happened was that the madness of crowds kicked in, and the people had this extraordinary delusion that the tulip value would never go down. And they kept going up, and people kept buying, and eventually it was a bubble, and it crashed. I guess the point about a bubble, there's things that maybe aren't bubbles, like, you know, maybe gold's not a bubble because the prices are tend to be somewhat stable, I guess. But a bubble is anything that goes up and then suddenly comes back down. Stock market is 29, or 27. There's, you know, a bunch of examples through history.
Well, I think what's interesting about all this is we start looking backwards through the rearview mirror, what we're emerging out of, and then we look at what forward into what we have to do as the consequences of that, and I want to get into that a bit. But you really look forward to, we know what's going to repeat itself. You go, tulips, give me a break. Didn't they see that one coming? Folks, I'm telling you, we're going to look back on the housing crisis with the same perspective. Did we not see that coming? Andy's point before the broadcast was, you know what, folks? It is history repeats itself. We try to educate. We try to do everything we can to get the word out. And there's Ivy League schools, all schools start teaching about the tulip principle. But did it stop the housing crisis from happening? No. So what is coming next? Where are we heading? I listen to what Joe reports as to what's going on in Europe, the attitude of kicking the can down the road, and that can eventually becoming a grenade. You kick it that last time, and it blows up. And I think we get into hyperinflation. We look at some of the things we could be facing as an economy. Remember when we had Tony Moss on, Joe? We were talking about that,
oh, yeah.
And we had people running for the exits afterwards. I mean, there are those things. You have to have those discussions. You need to be talking about those. What's your thoughts, Joe, as you look at some of the topics that you're facing as it looks to state? What are you hearing from the attitude of your customers? Are they accepting it? Are they just standing in awe?
Well, you know, right now everyone's running so hard trying to do the deals that are out there to be done with low rates and favorable,
yep.
Terms, programs, and for refinancing. So everyone is just extremely busy and thankful for it.
Yep.
Down the road,
making hay while the hay. Yeah. Go ahead.
Absolutely, you have to. That's the nature of the industry, and so. You know, down the road, there are going to be hurdles. Certainly, as you look forward and you see the majority of loans carrying rates at 4.5%, there's not likely to be refi bubbles coming up. And so down the road, it's got to be purchase money business, and that's going to count on a good economy with jobs.
Yep. Well, that is, and the uncertainty is just constantly nagging at that and pulling those reports down. One of the things that the mood at the attendance at the conference is what I thought I'd report on a little bit, is give some general sense of what the mood was there at the conferences, that both the tech conference and the secondary conference. And almost without fail, everyone at the conference was well attended. They had great sessions. Everyone is frustrated in the time it takes to get approved with Ginnie Mae, and yet Ginnie Mae, Ted Tozier stands up there and says, you can get it done if your package is complete. Once it's complete, you can get it done in 6 months. I don't know. I interviewed a lot of people there. Not one person has come close to getting it done in 9 months, much less a year. Or, I mean, much less 6 months. So it's 9 months to a year. And some of them were saying it. I've been in there with that over an application over 12 months. I haven't even gotten so much as a phone call. So there's certainly a lot of people trying to go through a few doors, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae. One of the things, but the general mood is we're making a lot of loans. So like Andy said, it's very busy. We're capitalizing on this. We're enjoying this time. But what's coming, and that's that uncertainty aspect. One of the things that is being rumored at the conference, again, I want to stress this is a rumor. This is something that is being talked about, but I actually read an article on it, and I'm trying to find that article in the reporter that reported it so we can get more on this, and we'll have more on this by next week. I promise you we'll have some details on this by next week, is the fact that Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and specifically Ginnie Mae is kicking around the concept of limiting the number of loans independent mortgage bankers can sell to the agencies based on their net worth. In other words, the lower the net worth, the lower the volume you're going to be able to sell to the agencies. If you hit the limit, you're going to have to go and sell up and through to the agencies via an aggregator. So if you sell through a Wells Fargo, a Chase, or a Citi, then that will not count against you, won't be included in it because it's a part of what they're doing. Folks, if in fact that begins to – if that gets legs and that goes in, gets being given serious consideration, you sit and look at what are you thinking, what is everyone thinking when it comes to two agencies, three agencies, Fannie, Freddie, and Ginnie, two of which are struggling and have dealing with legacy issues. Ginnie Mae is just dealing with sheer volume that they are working through. What does that do to the independent mortgage banking world? And we have Basel III out there. Basel III says at some point in time, the big banks, the Wells Fargos of the world, the larger banks, are they going to cap the amount of the exposure that they have in the industry? Andy, could you're familiar with Basel III enough, or should we say that for next week? Briefly, if you get into Basel III, just a touch, so we explain that for our listeners.
Basically, when a mortgage-backed security is created, the servicing is retained by the seller, and that's then put on the books as a mortgage servicing right, and it's the anticipated future cash flows of the future revenue stream on a net basis is put on the balance sheet, and then it goes back and is impairment tested. But that mortgage servicing right then has capital allocations associated with it that currently for financial institutions is 10%. They're going to start doing 100% risk weighting of MSRs for banks. So that means that their capital allocation for mortgage servicing rights is going to be increased by 90%, which then puts caps on the amount that they can retain and keep.
So if they're going to begin to squeeze the volume that the independents can send up, into Ginnie Mae. And one person said, well, I heard that for Ginnie Mae, but I didn't hear it about Fannie and Freddie. But several other people says, no, I read the same thing, Dave. We're all scrambling to get it because you're flying to the conference. You're scanning all the news articles, and that's where I saw it, in a scan of a news article. So I'm slightly hesitant to say anything. But I want to alert people about this because it is something that is going to get a lot more attention if it, in fact, goes from discussion into implementation. Joe, your thoughts?
Yeah, my thoughts are that this is all about counterparty risk, right? And so you're selling loans
risk
to the agency with your reps and warranties on it, it would be most likely, I assume, a cumulative thing. I would hope that if they look at loans, they'd look at an aging process and let loans fall out of this calculation at some point. But you know, if you're a mortgage banker with a $2-4 million net worth, and you know, you're probably leveraging that to do 50 times that, maybe 100 times that.
100 times that.
And what's the limit going to be? I mean, is the limit going to be 500 times your net worth? And at that point, it's kind of like, well, what's the purpose? And then the other thought I have, Dave, is if this is considered prudent for Fannie and Freddie and Ginnie, why on earth would we not think the banks would be asked to do something similar, you know, the correspondents, the aggregators?
Well, I think you understand, let's try to flip to the other side and go on, I got to get in someone else's argument. In order to effectively argue against them, I got to get inside their argument. So you get inside the Fannie Freddie argument that might be, you know, kicking this around, is going, we're trying to put a lot of loans back to people that had reps and warrants, and we're discovering they don't have the ability, they don't have the ability to repurchase all these loans because they have a net worth of $2.5 million or even $5 million. And they're dumping back in the tune of, you know, $15 million in repurchases back on these companies, going, that's getting juice out of a turnip. That's just not going to work. Even the profit doctor couldn't get that math to work. So you understand the logic of what they're doing. The only way we could do that is to limit the number of loans that these guys put into the system. So we know that we can go back to them at some point in time. But Alice, I come to you. Isn't this flawed in the thinking as it relates to Fannie and Freddie with the AUS systems? The underwriting guidelines should have standards that that we should have it to the point where it comes back, not the loans that they're buying are being underwritten and acquired based on the value of those or the attributes of those loans. And have we lost our way in this, Alice, a bit?
Oh, I think we have. I think we've got, you know, and I don't know if some of this is coming from the, you know, the comment period that just closed on that enhanced prudential standards and maybe some of the comments out of that, you know. But I think when you start to try and say we're going to limit what goes up to Fannie and Freddie, we say we're using your systems. You know, the lenders have the same underwriting criteria, the same product. How is the origination source changing the risk? There's so much control over the lenders. They actually probably have a better handle on what's going on in their shops than some of the larger banks do. You know, I don't get this at all, because the fundamental loan quality, someone has to show me where's the real difference in the number and in the performance of these loans. You know, where is this coming from?
Well, they're all stumbling around trying to resolve and still cleaning up from the last accident, the bubble that Andy, the tulip principle that Andy was talking about. Andy?
Well, it's also the popular delusion that the skin in the game is going to fix it, too. And I think that's part of what they're driving at. They think that that's going to solve all the problems, and it's not.
Well, that's why I came back to you, because David Stevens, in this article that you read, did a really good job of saying, rethinking the solutions to the problem, and way in fact, skin in the game may not have had any impact on it if there had been a full amount of skin in.
No, and you know what? This article that I keep referencing, this paper that was written by three economists, two from the Boston Fed and one from the Atlanta Fed, hit on this very, very, very well. I think, you know, everybody really needs to break this out and read it. Just Google "The Causes of the Foreclosure Crisis" by Christopher Foote. Now, there's two other
say
authors.
Say that one more time, so everyone that's getting – say it one more time.
The title's longer, but – Google "The Causes of the Foreclosure Crisis" by Christopher Foote, F-O-O-T-E, and
okay.
It'll come up.
Remember reading other stuff
from the Boston Fed. Yeah.
Yep.
And
yeah, well,
they do a great
published
job. Yeah, he's a smart guy. They've done a great job in nailing this down, including the hit on the point about skin in the game. And the reality was a lot of the CDO issuers, you know, Lehman, how about, had tons of skin in the game. That's why they crashed. Merrill had tons of skin. They had billions of dollars of skin in the game, and they failed. And so just having skin in the game doesn't fix the problem. It's really a function of solid underwriting and solid compliance. And if you do your job right and you make a loan and you do what you're supposed to do and there's a subsequent default, well, that's called lending. That's why you have G fees. I mean, the G fees are supposed to cover the losses. So fix the underwriting standards so they are what they should be. And I think the reality is we've known what good underwriting was for a very long time. You know, when I first went through credit training in the 70s and the 80s, if we had just done that through the crisis, we wouldn't have had all these problems. You know, I'm an old guy now, not as old as Dave, but close enough.
But
I get to
but no one
like
knows how to do that anymore, Andy. I mean, the problem
that
I have, I was just teaching underwriting classes and processors over the last month, and it's amazing to me how they feel so trapped by the aggregators, you know, and the fact that, and of course sales, because if you're getting approved eligible at a 45 DTI, then that must be the whole story, and you must be fine. You know, never mind the guy has 10 jobs in the last 2 years. You know, so you know, I just think it's I don't know if our industry's made it around that curve yet to be completely confident that A, the system's making the right decision, that people even understand what is the system looking for, and I'm not allowed very much latitude on a manual review at all today.
Well, you know, Alice, it goes back to the days you and I are both DE underwriters. Back and then, we made the decision. I've been saying for years that the AUSs that came into the system, while I understand the principle of what they try to do, weakened the industry from a standpoint of making that subjective judgment. We started going, well, got to do the loan. I got to approve and accept, and I got the production manager breathing down my neck. The circling, highlighting, bold, you know, Helvetica bold 30-point, 32-point, this approve and accept. And the reality is it's rethinking that. I like your term. We haven't made it around the corner yet. I love that expression.
Well, and I think, you know, again, they're looking at counterparty risk. You know, what do we have to limit? And, again, you know, we all recognize there isn't anything in print yet, but just the concept of risk retention, counterparty risk. If we say we really have a very vanilla market right now in terms of the products that we're offering, I get high-risk products. But in our product market today, that's not adding the extra layer.
Right.
And it's the systems that need to get looked at and the process of underwriting and who can do what and lenders manage. I think lenders manage risk better than some of the big aggregators do.
Well, I got to tell you, I think that is actually the case. And we look at the number of lawsuits that are floating around there. Everyone's trying to sue all the way up the whole food chain. The reality is the responsibility lies with the lender that makes the loan, certainly from the compliance standpoint. The fact that some of these lawsuits out there trying where they're pushing it all the way up is just absurd to me, beyond absurd. But the reality is it's really – it's got to get back down to the point where those that are making the decision have got the tools. And I just could get on my – soapbox big time about the fact that how reliant we become and how it's weakened the talent pool of being able to have good subjectivity on underwriting. I want to get into one other thing that was really prevalent in New York at the secondary conference is the need for private investors to return to the secondary markets. It was one of the things that there was both encouragement, the fact that there are those and reentering. Specifically, I had lunch with the guys there at Gateway. Great, Kevin Stitt and oh my gosh, you'll forgive me for having a senior moment on Scott Henley was there, and we had a great lunch talking about that. And they're being inundated with applications everyone's submitting to them. I think we're seeing, and it's encouraging to see some of these guys coming back into the market. Certainly, this discussion on Fannie and Freddie are going to have an impact on how effective they can be entering the market, the correspondent market. But it's also, we're looking like Wilbur Ross. Had a chance to sit with Tom Milan of Capital Markets Cooperative at the JetBlue Terminal Wednesday night as we're both exhausted. Had some sushi, had a good glass of wine, and we sat and visited about the whole discussion of what's happening with his investment, specifically in Wilbur Ross. And he tells a story about how a number of people are calling him. And he says, he didn't use this expression, but I'm thinking about it. It sounds like Noah inside the ark. He just pulled the gate up, and it's raining like heck, and everyone starts beating on the side of the ark. Let me in. I'm married, I have wife and kids. If you won't take me, at least take my kids. There's almost a sense of panic. People that were that are wanting to get into any conduit, any of these new and private investors before the door closes because they can't handle any more. So Kevin Stitt and his group, he and Scott Henley, are doing a great job of getting the door out, getting out. We've got Wilbur Ross investing money through Tom Milan. They bought Hank Cunningham's company, Cunningham Mortgage. They're opening the door. But here's the one thing that's coming up, guys, and for all our listeners, but I would love to comment on that, is there's a sense that there is so much need out there for new correspondent lenders to enter the market that only the best of the best, only the strongest ones are going to get through these few doors that are opening up. The other one is New Penn Financial. We've talked about them. They've advertised on the radio program through what Lou Ranieri has done and some of the things. So it was really interesting. We want them. They're welcome. But it's like we're not seeing enough of them come through the door. So there's a lot of hoping and a wishing that more will open up. Thoughts on that? Let's start with you, Joe.
Well, those people, Gateway and the new guys coming in, are unfortunately still using the same outlets that everyone else or the other correspondents have been using.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when you talk about private capital, you got to go that next step, and it's got to be that there's some way to compete with the agency MBS structure as an outlet, because it's clear that everything we're seeing is a push, and it needs to be a push out of the market. There's got to be an end to Fannie and Freddie, and it's not going to stay the way it is now for a whole lot longer.
Well, when we see the Redwood Trust REIT have the success, I think we're seeing the success of them getting securities out, private issuances out. And so I think there's general thought. And they were calling – a lot of people were drilling in, the reporters were drilling in on the folks at New Penn Financial. When are you coming out and starting to bring some product to market through private securitizations? And because they're all wanting them to do it sooner than later to test – is this going to actually start working? Are the private markets back? And you were talking, Joe, earlier about – we were talking earlier when, in your segment about interest rates. Rates being so low, people are looking for a higher yield. It is distinctly possible that we could see the private markets come back. But do we have the systemic issues addressed related to underwriting and all the quality issues that brought us to the last disaster? And maybe to Andy's point, maybe we haven't learned all the lessons. So thoughts, Joe?
Yeah, I think new capital coming in, and if they are the ultimate guarantor, they're going to do a lot of the same things the agencies are doing now. They're going to charge higher guarantee fees. They're going to limit how much the counterparty risk they'll take, and so can't blame the agencies for beginning to do that now. It's just hard to accept.
It's really hard to accept, Alice.
Yeah, I think all I can do at that point is Joe just said it all. You know, if it's all just ending up back at the agencies, it's not anything new. But if it's, they are truly the giving us new products, then it does open up new doors. But we'll have to wait and see.
Prophet Doctor, any closing wisdom thoughts? You talked to us about tulips. You talked to us about some economic principles. Volcker gives good historical lessons. Your thoughts?
Well, I think it's great that we're getting more correspondents in the mix, and I think even if they are delivering to the existing outlets, Fannie, Freddie, Ginnie, that's still okay because it creates some competition for the big aggregators. So I think having mid-tier aggregators is a great thing to do. And then to Joe's point, we also need a jumbo outlet, and that's going to take private securitization. And, you know, that really doesn't have legs yet, although it should be starting to. You know, the agency's egg on their face is kind of wiped off now, and I think we do know better about how to do what we do. We've always known it. We just forgot. We stopped doing it. The crash in mortgage, I don't think, happened because we didn't know what to do. It's because we stopped doing what we know what to do. And so it's
That's
just a matter
great
of
expression.
Go back to basics, do it right.
Great commentary. We stopped doing what we knew what to do. Alice, that sounds like a pretty good statement. We could turn that into a book.
There you go. Or a song, right?
Or a song. Yeah, that's the musician in the audience here. Folks, we appreciate you tuning in and being with us each and every week. And submit your ideas to us. We really appreciate it when you bring us content that you want us to discuss. I appreciate all the kind words you're saying about that cover a lot of the issues. That's great. But we want to hear from you. Be sure to email me at D as in David, LYKKEN, at MBS as in Mortgage Banking Solutions, the initials for Mortgage Banking Solutions. So dLickin at MBS-team.com or go to our website, LickinOnLending.com, where you listen to the broadcast. Appreciate you being with us each and every week. Have a great week. Next week, we will be back continuing the discussion of some of these hot topics and look at some of the developments. Have a great week, everybody. Talk to you next week.
This has been Lickin on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.